Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 84. I'm Jim Cornell and this is the weekly podcast from LeBiotech. Let's get right into the interview, which this week is on how biotech is taking on and changing treatments in the neurological disorders and diseases space. At the forefront is Rapport Therapeutics, and this week we have a conversation with the company's CEO, Abe Cisse. And I first asked Abe for a little bit of background on the company itself.
Sure. So, Jim, first of all, I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you today and, you know, talk to you a little bit about our company, Rapport Therapeutics, and what we're doing in neuroscience, which we think we're about to embark on some real transformational change for patients. But Rapport Therapeutics, our vision is to create the leading precision neuroscience company. Now, we know that word precision is used somewhat loosely in our industry, especially in neuroscience, but we believe our platform can really bring precision to life in neuroscience across a broad base of disorders as well as diseases. The company was founded through a collaboration between Third Rock Ventures and Johnson & Johnson, specifically the Janssen arm of Johnson & Johnson, where this science really had been incubated and developed over the course of a decade. And the science actually dates back to our chief scientific officer and our founder, who was the previous head of neuroscience drug discovery at Johnson & Johnson, who made this discovery of receptor-associated proteins back in his academic career at UCSF. And really what the targeting of receptor-associated proteins allows for is unprecedented specificity in terms of neuroanatomical precision with small molecules, as well as sensory neuron precision with small molecules. We're a fully integrated discovery and development company operating across both San Diego, where our discovery efforts are, and in Boston, where our development efforts are. And we have one program in the clinic currently focused on a condition by the name of focal onset seizures, and look to bring several other programs into the clinic here over the next 3 to 5 years.
You were at a different company before Rapport. What was it that attracted you to going to Rapport?
Great question. So I was at another company focused in neuroscience prior to Rapport, a company by the name of Cerevel Therapeutics. And prior to that, I was a CEO of another company by the name of Tiburial Therapeutics, which was also focused in neuroscience, specifically neuroendocrine tumors. And I think what I have appreciated, you know, over the past decade is just the emerging science in neuroscience, that I think we are really at the cusp of transformational innovation for patients in neuroscience. And if I think about kind of each step I've had across my learning and my career in neuroscience, what really has culminated at Rapport is where, you know, I always say biology and chemistry have really started to come together and meet one another, that has allowed for us to really embark on the development of transformational medicines. And that's really what drove me to Rapport, is the fact that the biology that has really been led by our discovery team, and then being able to develop compounds that can specifically modulate these receptors and these protein-protein kind of interfaces, really puts us in a position where not only can we do that for a one lead program, but what really also interested me in Rapport and the opportunity we have is this platform really stretches all the way back to discovery and really provides the opportunity for a self-sustaining and regenerative pipeline, which is one of the hardest things to do in neuroscience, is to have a true platform that you can really look to interrogate several targets, as well as have the opportunity to develop medicines and compounds for a broad-based set of neurological disorders. And that's really what we have at Rapport. And that was, you know, a key aspect of me really being excited about the company, joining the company, and then ultimately building the company to where we are today.
You mentioned that it's been a challenge in the past. Why has there been an issue with designing novel medicines for neurology?
There are several issues in neuroscience as you think about, you know, the efforts to develop novel compounds, novel approaches, and really innovative and transformational treatments for patients. The first is, in neuroscience, one of the big challenges is the translational medicine or lack thereof in neuroscience. So there are certain conditions that have validated preclinical models that give you a really high probability of success as you think about showing pharmacodynamics, showing efficacy in preclinical models, that you have a high degree of confidence that that efficacy is going to translate into efficacy in the clinic. But there's many conditions where that just does not exist, primarily in the neuropsychiatry area. The other issue that has really been a challenge in neuroscience is many of these conditions have very heterogeneous patient populations. So you're always kind of looking for a signal across a heterogeneous patient population. But what we know is that not all of these patients are going to have a meaningful response to treatment. And what that is really challenged is, you know, how you think about developing clinical development strategies, how you think about overall trial enrollment, and how you think about actually, you know, developing a drug in these very heterogeneous patient populations. Another challenge has been the lack of genetics and the lack of really those factors that would allow you to really develop medicines that are very specifically targeted for a specific set of patients. The genetics just aren't there in neuroscience as they are in some other therapeutic categories, such as oncology. So with that, it has been somewhat of a limitation in what we can achieve in neuroscience. What excites me is when I think about a couple of those areas: one, genetics; two, thinking about therapies that are going to address a broad set of the patient population. Some of the science that we're working on here at Rapport, we really think we can overcome some of those issues. So as an example, in some of our programs, we know that there is a genetic association with certain receptors in certain conditions. But the challenge historically has been, even knowing that these receptors are drivers in certain diseases, the challenge has been, can you modulate those receptors in a way that provides efficacy without having significant tolerability issues? And that's really the challenge in neuroscience, because oftentimes you're modulating receptors that are ubiquitous throughout your brain and body. And although you might be driving efficacy, given the fact that you're interacting with receptors throughout the brain and the body, you're also usually having very narrow treatment margins and tolerability issues that really don't make these targets druggable. What we're doing at Rapport is, through one, the known genetics of receptors in certain diseases, as well as being able to target receptor-associated proteins, we believe we can interact with receptors in only the sensory neurons, or as well as the neuroanatomic region that really matters. So in that regard, we know the genetic drivers of certain receptors in diseases, but if we can drug those receptors in a way that are highly, highly precise and specific, we can really mitigate some of those issues that are associated with the development of neuromedicines historically.
What are some of the conditions that have significant unmet needs in this area?
One area, and it's really a focus of our lead program, is epilepsy. And epilepsy is an area that has had several new drugs developed, you know, over the past decade. But the issue persists in the fact that although new mechanisms have been identified to treat seizures, the issue still persists that these medicines often interact with receptors that are ubiquitous throughout the brain and the body. And what you see in a disease like epilepsy is that still in focal onset seizures, anywhere from 30 to 50% of patients are not fully managed, meaning those patients are still having breakthrough seizures. And the challenge for these patients is often the efficacy of drugs comes with significant tolerability issues. And that's because drugs that are pan-agonists, pan-antagonists, are really interacting with receptors that are throughout the brain. So if you have interaction or modulation of receptors, say in the hindbrains, in areas such as the cerebellum, as well as the brainstem, what you're seeing is, you know, effects on coordination, motoric impairment, sedation, et cetera. And for us, what we've been able to do is have a drug that only focuses in the forebrain in areas such as the limbic system, the hippocampus, the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala. So what that allows for is efficacy where it's needed, but sparing the areas of the brain that really have significant tolerability issues. So that's just an area such as epilepsy, and that would be transformational for patients, having a therapy that delivers efficacy, has effective seizure reduction, but does not have any impact on sedation as well as motoric impairment. That has never really been able to be achieved for patients that suffer from focal onset seizures. And that idea of really kind of that ubiquitous antagonism or agonism or modulation, say, with receptors is really an issue that cuts across many, many areas of neurology, whether it be areas such as neuropsychiatry, areas such as pain. All of these areas have this issue that we are trying to solve for, which are symptomatic treatment of patients, but in a way that really allow patients to have efficacy with a therapy, minimize side effects, and ultimately being able to maintain treatment on the most efficacious dose.
You've mentioned this is so transformational a couple of times. I wonder if you could maybe set the scene by telling me about the discovery of receptor-associated proteins, what they are and what it means for treatments.
Sure. I think the best way to really highlight the discovery of receptor-associated proteins, its application in drug discovery, and then ultimately its role in drug development, is through our lead program, which is a gamma-8 TARP AMPA modulator program. And I'll break all of this down rather than using all of these acronyms and really talk about, you know, what this all means. So as I said in our introduction, Jim, this was a discovery that was made by our founder, as well as our chief scientific officer, David Brett. David was a professor of neurobiology at UCSF and made what was at that time really a groundbreaking discovery. And that was that with AMPA receptors, which are a specific set of excitatory receptors in the brain, very important receptor in the brain, one of the most important receptors in the brain for glutamate trafficking. What David was able to discover is that AMPA receptors had a family of proteins that were associated with them. And those proteins controlled both trafficking as well as conductance. And what David was able to discover is that these proteins were specific to regions of the brain. So in the case of these transmembrane AMPA regulatory receptor proteins, which are called TARPs, what David was able to discover is that these specific TARPs had subfamilies that were located in certain areas of the brain. So one was named stargazing, another was, you know, gamma 2, gamma 4, gamma 8. And what was really interesting about this is that given their neuroanatomical specificity, if you were able to really drug kind of that pocket, that accessory protein receptor pocket, what you would be able to do is just modulate AMPA receptors in certain areas of the brain. And that opens a kind of whole new world of opportunity, because what is known about the biology and the role of AMPA receptors is that in certain areas of the brain, they're responsible for certain things. In the case of the limbic system, AMPA receptors are well known to be able to play critical roles in excitatory response as well as seizure control. So what this opened up was a whole new opportunity, as an example, to just modulate AMP receptors in the limbic system that really could provide the opportunity for unprecedented specificity, but also the ability to provide efficacy with minimizing tolerability issues in the treatment of seizures. And that's really what has occurred over time. So this was a discovery that was made almost two decades ago by David at UCSF and really has matured through his career. But what David has and team have been able to do, and this is our scientist at Rapport, is then being able to pull that science of receptor-associated proteins, given what we've learned about their role with AMPA receptors and their role, as I said, in drug discovery and drug development, is then be able to apply that same foundational science to other receptors that are known both from a clinical precedent standpoint as well as a genetic standpoint, have really known to have significant roles in certain disease areas. And we've applied that receptor-associated protein science to these new channels as well as receptors that really allow us to unlock this opportunity for several other conditions.
How are you able to avoid some of the typical side effects that tend to happen with treatment of neurological disorders?
Yep, great question. And that comes down to the specificity of receptor-associated proteins. So specifically, as we think about our lead program, and again, I think looking at our lead program, which is RAP-219, is really the best way to apply this science of receptor-associated protein and really understand its role and its potential benefit to patients. So what targeting receptor-associated proteins does in the case of RAP-219 and epilepsy is interacting with receptors and modulating receptors only in the neuroanatomical region of the brain that we believe, and it's widely understood, plays a role in the disease. So in this case, when we think about focal onset seizures, that is in the limbic system, that is the forebrain. So really, there's no reason to be modulating receptors in the case of this disease in regions outside of the limbic system, outside of the forebrain. So there's no reason to be modulating receptors in the cerebellum or the brainstem. The reality is previous treatments have never been able to achieve that because they don't have the specificity of receptor-associated proteins. So what occurs in the case of anti-seizure medications is patients are able to achieve some level of seizure control, but that comes with a significant downside, and that is really intolerable side effects. And these side effects are real for patients. And what we see in preclinical models and what you often see in early clinical development for anti-seizure medications is at the same level you achieve efficacy is the same level that you're starting to see these really intolerable side effects, you know, significant sedation, somnolence, motoric impairment. And by approaching it through receptor-associated proteins in the way that we are and really being focused in the neuroanatomic region of interest, what we're able to see in this approach is we can basically provide efficacy with no impairment in sedation or motor control, as an example. And that all comes through the lens and really through approaching it by targeting receptor-associated proteins that are only modulating receptors in the area of interest, such as the limbic system in this case.
Are there any other companies working on either receptor-associated proteins or in this particular space that are making progress in other areas?
Not that we are aware of. And this is one of the real kind of key differentiators for Rapport. This science was really developed by David and our team of discovery scientists. So this is an area that we feel we're really leading in. And the science is growing a significant appreciation in both the scientific community as well as the clinical community, just given the promise of the science to develop novel compounds and novel approaches to treat some of the most challenging conditions, you know, our society and the global society faces. So we are very well positioned, given the fact that, one, there's not many companies that have the ability to do what we're doing, and two, to our knowledge, no one is really investing in the level of science that we are, and we're well ahead of anyone that would be looking in this area.
How do you approach designing treatments for different conditions?
One of the areas that we are very focused in is what we call, and what the industry refers to as, translational medicine and translational science. And I think that is a capability that, when you think about drug development, efficient drug development, and really with the drive being, you know, efficiency for patient's sake, meaning the faster we can get ourselves to an answer in drug development in terms of efficacy signals, the faster we can really move a overall development program and think about getting much needed therapies to patients. Our focus is in that area, is in translational medicine. So, as I said, many of the receptors that we are targeting are known receptors. These receptors are known both from a genetic standpoint as well as a clinical precedent standpoint, meaning there has been some level of validation that shows that modulation of a given receptor has a role in really managing and treating a specific disease. So what we need to do is be able to, one, we need to obviously be able to develop the compounds that have the right potency and specificity to be able to modulate these receptors. But two, then can we do the right preclinical models? Can we do them efficiently that give us an eye towards efficacy? And then two, can we then translate that rapidly in the clinic, both in initial phase one studies to determine safety and pharmacology or pharmacokinetics of the compound? And then two, can we then step into proof of concept studies in a rapid manner that allow us to understand a efficacy signal? And for us, we believe that that is really kind of the sweet spot of drug development, specific in neuroscience. The ability to get to those proof of concept results in patients rapidly is one of the most important things that a company can do in drug development. And that is where we have a lot of focus. If you look at our lead program, our RAP-219 program, this is a program where we've done that and shown our ability to do that in a very rapid fashion. One, being able to show that we have these very wide treatment margins in our initial phase one studies. And then two, what we're about to enter in is a proof of concept study that is really innovative in terms of its approach in epilepsy, because it will show a signal in a patient population that ultimately will increase our likelihood of success in later trials. And being able to do that rapidly is something that, you know, if companies can do that, that gives them the best shot of success for long-term success in clinical development and ultimately getting products to patients as rapidly as possible.
Where are you at on that pathway right now in getting to patients in terms of clinical trials?
So we have completed our phase one study. That is our SAD-MAD study, which really does a couple things for us. One, it helps us understand the pharmacokinetics of the drug, and two, really helps us understand the safety profile of the drug in healthy volunteers. We've just completed that study. We are very pleased by the results, because this whole thesis of receptor-associated proteins is coming through, meaning we are getting to therapeutic concentrations and we are not seeing any of the traditional tolerability issues that are seen with anti-seizure medications. So that was a major milestone for this program. We've just completed that. What we'll be entering into over the next 3 to 5 months will be a trial in patients. So that will be our phase 2A proof of concept trial in focal onset patients. And that's where kind of that translational medicine expertise really comes to bear doing this trial in a very efficient manner, where we hope to have data middle of 2025. That is the goal. That would really be the first time to show efficacy in patient as well as safety in a patient population with this program. So if you think about that from a timeline perspective, Jim, you know, it's really encouraging. You know, here's a program that we took into the clinic in a phase one program in 2023, and we'll actually have data in patients in 2025. In terms of, you know, drug development, that is a very rapid pace as you think about getting a new compound into phase one healthy volunteer studies and ultimately moving that into patients. That's where we really believe from a capability standpoint, if we can continue to develop that capability in translational medicine and drive early proof of concept results, you know, that's a differentiating capability for us as a company, but also a capability that allows us to see the promise of as many compounds and as many approaches to different diseases as possible.
I guess in terms of end results, how are you defining success when it comes to patients? Is it a complete cure? Is it halting the conditions, slowing them down?
So for the areas that we're focused in currently, it is much more about symptomatic control than it is about slowing disease progression, or it is about really curing a disease, as an example. So when you think about epilepsy, really the goal for these patients is what is referred to as seizure freedom. Can you provide a medicine to patients that allows them to take that medicine chronically and achieve seizure freedom? So they're not having seizures, not having breakthrough seizures. We believe we have the ability to greatly improve that outcome for patients, so have a higher degree of seizure freedom, but also doing that in a way that allows patients to really stay on their therapy because they have a tolerability profile that doesn't cause them significant issues such as sedation, somnolence, motoric impairment, as an example. And we have that approach for areas such as neuropathic pain, areas in neuropsychiatry, which again are really providing much better symptomatic control of the disease for patients than they can currently achieve with the therapies that are available to them. In the areas such as hearing loss, as well as vestibular disorders, that is an area where we believe we could have a meaningful impact in terms of actually either slowing down the rate of hearing loss or actually improving hearing loss due to acoustic trauma, as well as really controlling a condition or reversing a condition such as tinnitus. So there is an area in hearing loss where we have a little bit more than symptom control, but I will say for the majority of the approaches that we have in areas such as pain, epilepsy, as well as neuropsychiatry, it's really about a significant step in symptom control for the majority of patients.
Would it be something that would be used in conjunction with other treatments, or would it be a standalone?
So many of these conditions do have a polypharmacy approach. And for epilepsy, that is the case. So epilepsy patients are on anywhere from 2 to 5 medications. So when you think about a new treatment in an area such as epilepsy, you're looking for a treatment that can be easily added to current treatments. So things that are important there are, one, a novel mechanism of action. So is this going to be a mechanism of action that patients have not tried previously that really could have a breakthrough in terms of efficacy? 2, a drug that is very well tolerated. And 3, from an administration standpoint, is one that can be easily added to a rational polypharmacy approach. And one of the major conditions there is how the drug is metabolized and will it have an effect on other drugs? So a drug-drug interaction. For us, as we think about our approach here at Rapport, we're trying to really solve for all of those issues. And we believe we will through not only the approach of receptor-associated proteins, but also from a chemistry standpoint, how we develop these compounds. So 1, delivering that efficacy in a novel way. 2, providing tolerability improvements for patients, and then 3, ensuring that our compounds are metabolized in a way, but also structured in a way that really have minimal impacts or no impacts on drug-drug interactions. And when you think about areas such as epilepsy, pain, neuropsychiatry, all of these areas, and neuropsychiatry has several conditions that are kind of under that bucket, but all of those conditions are really approached through a polypharmacy type of treatment by clinicians.
I completely forgot to ask how this is administered.
Yep. So for our lead program and all of our programs, these are small molecules that will have an oral tablet formulation. That is kind of the lead presentation of our investigational drugs. What is interesting about these compounds is, given the ability to target receptor-associated proteins, given that specificity, you can have exquisitely potent compounds. And for our lead program, as an example, we have a compound that has therapeutic concentration in the single-digit nanograms per ml, which, you know, from a small molecule standpoint, is just a really unprecedented potency for a small molecule. And what that allows for is not only oral formulations, but given the low drug volume that will be required, given the potency, given the fact that we do not have drug-drug interactions, what that also allows for is thinking about formulations such as a long-acting injectable, which, when you think about an oral formulation and a long-acting injectable formulation, what that allows for is really broadening the clinical utility of a drug such as ours, where patients that need a long-acting injectable, so, you know, don't want to be concerned about missing a dose, want to have coverage for a longer period of time, we see that opportunity with our compounds, which we think for epilepsy, as an example, would be so meaningful for these patients. There's never been a long-acting injectable, and that's primarily based on the limitations of compounds that are available to these patients. And having that sort of option for patients that suffer from focal onset seizures, patients that have neuropathic pain, patients that have a bipolar disorder, as an example, having not only the oral formulation, but the long-acting injectable would be very meaningful for them.
You mentioned earlier about how challenging the field is, but it seems like with some of the acquisitions that have been happening with BMS and AbbVie, there seems to be a bit more money flowing in. Why do you think there's increased interest in the space?
There is. And we at Rapport are fortunate in the fact that, you know, if you look at both the BMS acquisition as well as the AbbVie acquisition, we have people around the table in terms of company builders, scientists that have had direct roles in companies such as Cerevel as well as Karuna, which were the two acquisitions by BMS and AbbVie. So we know what it takes here at Rapport to build a company and really build novel medicines that we think will be, you know, really beneficial to patients that ultimately are getting the attention of large pharma. I think there's a couple things that are driving pharma's renewed interest in neuroscience. And I mentioned this at the beginning of our discussion, Jim, is that biology and chemistry are starting to match. And what we are seeing is that we're really in this kind of renaissance phase of neuroscience, where as we thought about some of the limitations for treating diseases that have significant unmet need and really are impacting millions of patients in the United States and really hundreds of millions of patients globally, the reality is we had a certain ceiling. Historically, we were making some incremental benefits in terms of reformulation of products, things such as receptor subtype selectivity. So maybe we could have higher degrees of selectivity when we interact with receptors. And if we had that higher degree of selectivity, maybe that would allow for better efficacy or improved tolerability. But all of these things are kind of incremental in nature. And where I think you're seeing neuroscience really evolve here over the past decade or so is that we are moving beyond that incremental shift in benefits that could occur for patients. We're thinking about, you know, real transformational therapies that are novel mechanisms for diseases, mechanisms and ways to approach diseases that will allow patients to control symptoms in a way that really was just not achievable previously. Ways for patients to be able to maintain themselves on their most efficacious dose while limiting some of the tolerability issues that have been really significant for patients. And we're now making more than an incremental step. We're making kind of this exponential step in terms of the benefits that can be realized for patients. And I think what you're going to see here over the next decade is you are going to see real change and innovation coming to neuroscience. I think about neuroscience today as we were with immuno-oncology 20 years ago, and just really making, you know, as I said, kind of exponential strides in our ability to really help patients and impact patients.
So I guess you're excited about the future for the end patients is the most important thing.
I am so excited about the future in neuroscience. You know, we have kind of this confluence of issues that I think are really presenting themselves to our society right now. You know, we have an aging population. We've also seen the impact of psychiatric disorders and affective disorders that have really impacted our society through the pandemic, as an example. And I think that's really just brought a light to some of these conditions that really have just gone underserved historically. So when you think about all of these dynamics and the growing population, both from an age-related neurology perspective, as well as just a global kind of basis, when you think about some of these more broad-based conditions that are not just age-related conditions or neurodegenerative conditions, I believe that one, this is an area that will be one of the most impactful therapeutic areas that will benefit society over the coming decades. But two, what it will do is it will have kind of these long-lasting impacts as we think about how improving treatment of neurological disorders can really benefit society as a whole, as we think about productivity in the workplace, as we think about the impact that neurodegenerative diseases have on our entire healthcare system, the impact that these diseases have on loved ones as well as caregivers. You know, I am really excited and really hopeful for the future because not only do I believe we're bringing innovation to these patients, but I think we have the opportunity to really impact society in a way that will just show huge benefits, you know, as we think about the cost of care, as we think about the impact on, as I said, kind of family networks and caregivers, et cetera. I'm really hopeful for what's to come.
So what are the next steps? I guess you're going to be pretty busy.
We are very busy. We have roughly 50 employees currently, kind of split between our discovery team in San Diego and our development operations, kind of corporate infrastructure in Boston. And the next steps for us are, one, bring our lead program, RAP-219, to patients. And it's drug development, so you can only have so much guarantee in your success. But we feel really bullish about this program, and we're really excited to see what results we'll see here in patients. The second is we look to bring that same mechanism that we're applying to epilepsy to other conditions where the biology takes us, as well as where clinical precedence takes us. And that's areas such as neuropathic pain, which is a significant unmet need in our society, really a non-opiate approach to managing pain, as well as areas such as bipolar disorder, which have huge challenges for patients as well as our healthcare system. And then from there, it's about progressing our discovery programs. We have several programs that are in medicinal chemistry. So these are late stage discovery programs, and our ability to really optimize compounds, we believe getting those compounds to development candidate status and ultimately into regulatory filings will have us, you know, having more programs in the clinic here over the next 2 to 4 years. So if you look at our company, this is a company that was very intentionally built with experts from discovery to development that really have the ability to develop compounds and one, get compounds to patients in neuroscience. And it's kind of a singular focus here at Rapport, where we have a company that is so passionate about the science, so passionate about the promise to patients, that I really think when you have great people that are really tied to great science, that's where great innovation comes from and great things for patients occur. So I'm really excited, and we'll see where the company goes from here, but we're off to a really great start.
Let's hope that all of that hard work pays off for those with epilepsy and with other neurological disorders sooner rather than later. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles at labiotech.eu, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.